irrigation water and nitrogen application for optimizing yield, fruit quality, and mineral nutrient status.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Miladi. And thank you for organizing this this workshop. And I know it is a rather difficult task to find the speakers and do that right. And you did a great job. I really appreciate that. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm glad that this is not a 1 o'clock meeting. It's 4 o'clock. I hope you're awake, and I can keep you busy for the next few minutes. When I joined the University of Idaho some 25 years ago, if I was talking about doing anything on irrigation, they would have thought that I'm crazy or something, because, you know, Idaho having water problem. This year, we have one of the orchards, one of our growers decided not to harvest any fruit from 1,600 acres of apples because of water deficiency. In fact, they decided to destroy the fruit just for the trees to survive from year to year. And that gives you an idea. And the situation in California even worse. And a story goes on and on. And I'm hearing that there are similar situations elsewhere in the world for water. So the era of using water as flood irrigation and wasting water is long gone, and we cannot afford doing that. And as a modern fruit practice, fruit producing practice, we have to get in the habit of using every square inch of land and water at the maximum efficiency possible. So today I'm going to talk about the precision in irrigation, water, and the nitrogen application for optimizing yield, fruit quality, and mineral nutrient in apple. It has been a long-term project that I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues, Bahar Falahi and Dr. Bahman Shafi and Mike Kister. And there are other people that they have cooperated with us in different aspects of this long-term project. Why are we interested particularly different water use or water use efficiency in different systems? You know, we see every year there are different design coming up and different rootstocks coming up, and Terence is going to talk about some of these aspects, I guess, in his talk. And for all of these systems and different combinations, we really don't have a good guideline for irrigation or nutrition. Basically, the guidelines that we have is so much of nitrogen per acre or so much of nitrogen per tree, nothing beyond that. But if you look at these four examples, that gives you an idea that how far we have come with the design, different architectures of the trees, and then each of them may need a different, may have a different water and nutrient requirements. We started this long-term project in 2001 on a 5-acre basis, and we had a total of 21 different irrigation regimes, and it was some of you have visited the station, and you can guess that why so many students quit and so many technicians left the job. But fortunately, they didn't kill me, and at least not yet. This is a view of the project that when we were establishing, it took us about a year and a half to 2 years just to establish this. And some of our students were nicknaming that as the second Egyptian pyramid project. So there are basically over 1,000 PVC pipes buried at the 3 feet deep, and then also buried between the lines to make it completely randomized design, basically to satisfy the statisticians. One of the systems is, I don't know if I can show right in here. This is basically partial zone drying that two weeks we water on one side of the tree, and then the next 2 weeks we water the other side. By the time that trees think that they are dying and the death is closing up, they produce seed and they get higher sugar, and then before they die, we resume the water. It's a practice that we followed from earlier work in us from Australia on wine grapes. And then, of course, we have a double drip system that the this is buried system that shows between the two lines of the distance between the two lines are 2 feet. It means each of the drip line is buried a foot from the tree line, and then of course each region is controlled by regulators, and then we have built-in pressure compensated system. This is showing basically above ground, we have above ground system and below ground system or buried system for irrigation, and then we have this is the partial zone drying drip system. Again, 2 weeks watering one side and then switching to the next side. But I'd like to emphasize on five treatments initially that we tried between 2002 and 2008, and that treatments were full sprinkler, partial sprinkler, full drip, partial drip, deficit drip, single and double drip. And budget, as far as water calculation, we used ETC. Yes, we did have sensors for soil sensors, but we decided to use ETC because soils are so variable that only Brent Black can verify that we cannot, within the same orchard, we cannot find two sites to be exactly the same soil. We decided to have ETC to be more uniform to the whole situation. We calculated the water needs based on the canopy development. And basically, we were adjusting our KC value every week, every Monday of irrigation, that we were doing irrigations on Monday and Thursdays for drip irrigation and the sprinklers only on Thursdays. Basically, we were adjusting the KC for the canopy, adjust canopy development, and the shading or ground shading factor. You can see here a sprinkler system average of 2004 and 2005. When trees were immature, each tree required 5,616 liters of water per season. And then each tree in drip irrigation average of 2 years was 2,921. When the trees were mature in 2006 and 2007, each sprinkler system had 6,461, and each drip system had 3,996 liters per season. And it's interesting that if you look at the difference between the drip irrigation and the sprinkler system, this is the microjet, the sprinkler system. At the beginning, when we started those early years, the difference between drip and the sprinkler was 72%. And the difference in the following year became 56%. And then the difference stayed the same after trees matured, and they remained about 38 to 40%. Now, looking at the leaf nitrogen, when in all treatments, when the trees were young, we had the highest level of nitrogen, and then as the season progressed, then there was a level that they kind of remained the same, and then nitrogen level was fluctuating with yield every year. But when they were stabilized, the leaf nitrogen was 2 to 2.38%. Looking at the yield fluctuation, obviously in those early years we had, in all of the treatments, we had lower yield. And then finally, when the trees were mature, trees with drip irrigation, full drip irrigation and the sprinkler system always had highest yield. And then leaf potassium fluctuation was very interesting. This is a soil that we don't usually apply potassium. We have enough potassium in the soil. But look at that. After a couple of or three seasons of yield, taking yield off of this ground, they reach to a point that they are about below 1.5% of leaf potassium. It means that we have to be on the top of potassium if we are doing the high-density system, because in no time they may deplete the existing potassium and we need to have additional potassium. Another point that I'd like to mention is that a sprinkler system always had a higher level of potassium than drip system. Leaf magnesium was exactly opposite to potassium, obviously because of the antagonistic effect between these two elements. Fruit weight was always, fruits were larger when we had full sprinkler and full drip. But you can see that in here we are using drip irrigation, which is using about 45-48% less water, but at the same time is giving us the same size fruit and the same yield. Fruit starch degradation pattern, or SDP, was very interesting, that the situation that we had partial zone drying drip, situation that the trees were stressed pretty badly, always had higher SDP, and in a simple terminology, they were more mature. Then we looked at the water nitrogen optimization situation. This is after testing them for the first 3 plus 2 5 years. This is from year 6 through year 10. We look at the more mature stage, and then we change the treatments to full sprinkler, 50% drip, full drip, 65% drip, and 50% deficit drip. And it's interesting that basically we are looking at the kind of same level of consumption for mature trees, slightly more than I pointed earlier, as I mentioned earlier. This is a full drip, and this is a full sprinkler. But look at this one. This is 65% deficit drip as compared to full drip. In every sense, as far as fruit quality, fruit size, yield, the difference between full drip and 65% drip, they were very close. Fruit size was larger when we had full drip system and slightly smaller when we had 65. But it seems to me that in years like this year, that we have to save water as much as we can. We can go somewhere probably about 75% of the full drip capacity, and we will be fine as far as fruit quality and yield is concerned. When we had deficit, when we had extreme deficit of water, the following years we were facing with this kind of a structure, a lot of fat bud structure. As a result, we were getting more yield in those early years of stress. Good news, right? But the fact is that this could not be maintained. This practice was not sustainable. After 8 years or 10 years, the same trees were not as fruitful as we would have expected. And this is the result of high level of nitrogen and high level of irrigation. Of course, that's, we don't want that. And cutting a long story short, this is 50% deficit drip, low nitrogen, 65% deficit drip, low nitrogen. This is what we call it, kind of optimum. And of course, the full drip system is the best. But you can see that anywhere between 65% and full drip would be an acceptable level of irrigation. The next question is that how deep do we want to bury our drip lines, and how many lines of drip do we need? To address this, we established an experiment that we used only one line that's going exactly along the tree line, and we buried them. And we compared this with a double drip system. In the double drip system that you see in the adjacent row right here, there are basically two lines, but in here we have only one line. After 10 years of data, taking data, we are finding that there was no difference in most quality factors and yield when you are using a single line and double line, as long as your amount or volume of water is the same. However, after 9 or 10 years, you do see some effects on micronutrients. And then we play with the depth. How deep do we want to bury these lines? And we had 14 inches, 10, 6, 4, and 0 inches from the ground level. Okay? We are finding that the best depth to bury this drip line would be about 4 inches. That's it. Nothing more than that. not putting on the surface, they will be on the way, and it's very uncomfortable to deal with different practices. At the same time, we don't want to go very deep, because the deeper we put in this sandy loam soil, most of the soils are going to go downward, and we are going to waste a lot of water. Another issue, can anybody guess what it is? Gophers. Gophers, they hate to travel on the surface because they are closer to light. When you bury them 4 inches deep, they don't like to stay close to the surface. But when we buried them about 14 inches deep, we always had problem with the gopher chewing on these lines. So the next step was looking at the irrigation and nitrogen precision. And in this case, we used the best treatment of all those irrigation treatments that we had, which was a full drip calculated based on full ET. And then we used the 0 gram, 20 gram, 40, 60, 80 grams of nitrogen over 4 years. The results are interesting that I show you that all of them in one slide. This is the cumulative yield. As you can see, when we reach to 40 gram, we reach the maximum yield. After that, we are not gaining anything for yield. And fruit weight, again, the same thing. When we get to the 40 gram per tree, that is the maximum for the fruit weight. And then we look at the average leaf nitrogen. The question is that if you do this in Alabama or Utah, or of course Utah is very similar to Idaho, but in other locations, the question is that you have a different soil type than we have in Idaho. How can we compare that? Probably the best way is looking at the leaf and fruit nitrogen level. At this, what we call it, ideal level, it seems that fruit nitrogen was about 2.2%. And at that level, the leaf nitrogen was 2.2, and fruit nitrogen was about 0.24 to 0.25% in the fruit tissue. And look at the color. Obviously, the more nitrogen we give, the less color we get. But it seems that, again, the 40% gave us the ideal level for fruit color. And fruit firmness, the more nitrogen we give, the softer the fruit gets. And it seems that at the level of 40 gram or this 2.2% leaf nitrogen, that gives us 8.3 kilogram of firmness at harvest and 7.9 kilograms of firmness after storage. So we put this fruit in the ripening chamber, similar to this one that we have in our ripening room. And then we look at the high level of nitrogen and low level of nitrogen. Anytime that we have high nitrogen, fruit growers think that fruits are not ready and they delay the harvest. But the fruits internally, they are more mature than the color shows. As a result, when they harvest them and then they put them in storage, they have a high rate of spoilage in the storage. So the more nitrogen you have, the higher CO2 you have. At the same time, the higher level of ethylene you get. And this is basically showing the 0 gram, 20 gram, 40 gram, 60 gram, and 80 gram of nitrogen per tree. We think that 40 gram and maximum of 60 gram per tree is the ideal level. I have to emphasize that as a practice, when we have young trees, when we are filling, I have an experiment with Dr. Terrence Robinson and Brent Black in Idaho. In that case, we are trying to finish all of our, or fill all of our space in the first couple of years or 3 years. We are really hard on nitrogen. We give them a lot of nitrogen. We give each tree about 80 grams of nitrogen per tree. That translates to 198 units of nitrogen per acre. But after trees mature, then we slow down to 40 grams. Now the next step is, I have just a couple more slides to finish them, is that now we have all of these blocks that we have established over 15, 16 years, with all of these deficit plots in place. Now we are teaming up with an engineer group, and we are using these flyers, and we fly on the top of the orchard, And in 18 seconds for each location, these are basically eight small jet engines that they have that. And then we know this block, we know by the map that this is, for example, this is the full sprinkler high nitrogen, and this is the 50% deficit drip. And then we can program it and say that any time you saw this color of the one that we are seeing, and that is 2 to 2.3% of leaf nitrogen, you call it ideal. That is the level that I'm using, about 22, 23 inches of water, which is great. That's the level that gives us best quality. Use it as an optimum, as a standard, and tell me how other orchards compare to this one. And it is very exciting, and we are going to continue that. And at this point, I will open that to some questions. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions.
Yes.
Are you measuring your canopy size to determine or to schedule irrigation? To get your different cases, basically.
Right, right. That's a very, very interesting. We worked on that in different ways to see what is the best way. Of course, the first couple of years before trees mature, that is an issue. After they reach the maturity, we use only one constant value, which is the maximum amount of KC. For those years, we were roughly measuring the length of the branches and then ground shading effect to see that what percentage of the ground is shaded. Say, for example, at the June 21st, which is the longest day of the year, if you fly on the top of the orchard, what percentage of this ground is shaded? When we reach 67.8% of the total orchard shaded, we call it optimum. We don't want to have 100% shaded. So that's why that then we calculated that it was about 1.78% every week until they after we were doing that practice until 2.5 years when they reached the complete maturity.
We have time for one more question.
Yes.
Was the camera be using real color, or did you use hyperspectral or anything like that when you were flying over
top? Is it regular camera, or we are using the red and then converting that to the real color? So it is extremely precise. And just a funny story, if I may. One of our technicians promised that he is not going to smoke and he is going to quit the smoking. And then we were flying at 1,000 meters and we found a cigarette butt in the orchard, and nobody other than him goes in the orchard. We brought and tell him that, hey, you're smoking. He said, oh, I'm not. Brought it in the zooming in the camera, and then he said, okay. So, thank you very much.